there, but the people have spoken, the people have put good things into action, and we're waiting for them to materialize, and they're on their way.
Here it is. Well, I hope that everyone has a fantastic and safe and healthy weekend. Everyone, hope take care of yourselves and each other, and, you know, stay warm, stay cool.
Stay cool, stay warm, and thank you so much for listening.
See ya.
Bye.
Listening to KBOO Portland at 90.7 FM. The time is 9 a.m. Next up is Veterans Voice.
Portland calling. Sisters and brothers, welcome to Veterans Voice Radio Show on KBOO 90.7 FM, Portland area, 104.3 FM, Corvallis and the Willamette Valley, 91.9 FM, Hood River and the Columbia River Gorge. And you can listen to KBOO on the World Wide Web at KBOO.FM. I'm Marvin, and I want to thank Ty for coming in and engineering the show for us today. I really appreciate it, Ty. Just really appreciate it.
Thank you.
When I woke up early this morning, my brain said, don't expect things to go smooth today. So I got up. I had everything I wanted to do for the show today, and I thought I'll print everything out in the morning. So I turned my printer on, went in the other room and tried to print, and so the printer decided that 15 years was enough time for it to work, so it doesn't work anymore. So I'm gonna have to jump back and forth to look stuff up, so kind of give me a little time to get this going the way I want it to go. I want to say hello to some friends. I want to say hello to Gary and Darla back in Lincoln, Nebraska, and to Tracy out in Manning, who helped me get my computer running again. I appreciate her help. And I want to say hello to my good friend Kathy, who I've known since 1990, who's been a part of the peace movement and the veterans peace movement in Portland since then. And she's such a wonderful person. It's just, I'm glad that she's my friend. I know that Monday was a national holiday for Dr. King, and I was remembering back when I was a kid, when all of the violence against our sisters and brother Americans of African descent who were being just attacked by the police and attacked by the right-wing organizations, the Ku Klux Klan, and the killing of so many people that were trying to help the peace movement for our sisters and brothers. And we had a small black and white TV set, an Emerson black and white TV set, and we would watch the evening news. I think they only had like three stations back then, you know. And so we would watch the Western news in the evening. My dad and mother were both from Missouri, and they never did. They never finished high school. They got as far as their sophomore years, and then they had to help their families. Both of my families were farmers back in Missouri, so. And I remember my mom talking to us about, you know, things that they had to do during the Depression, and my father also talked about stuff, and my mother always talked about a family where my grandfather was working on job building highways back in Missouri, and my grandmother was the cook for the crews, and one of the helpers that helped my grandmother was a black family that helped, you know, they cooked the grandmother and her cooked the food and did the laundry and everything for the work crews. And they had a son, little son. And my mother talked about how much fun it was, you know, to have those children around that they could play with and everything, you know, and be a part. And my mother never had a racist bone in her body. And she really taught that to us, to her children, to us. And when all this violence were coming out, and the, well, I, you know, our sister and brothers, you know, they've had violence, everything, since they were forcefully brought to Europe and to North and South America and to the Caribbean, you know, against their will. I've seen pictures of drawings of these ships that brought these folks to these countries. I mean, they were packed in there just so horrible, how they were brought here. And then, you know, the life they led, you know, it was just this horrible, horrible, horrible thing that happened to these folks. And you know, it's continuing to this day. So I'm trying to find some of this stuff that I want to talk about today. I should be able to find it here. Please cut me a little bit of slack, okay? Let's see if I can do this. Oh, come on. Oh, David Crosby died. Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. He was also a member of the Byrds. He was, you know, he had a bad liver. He had had a liver transplant, and quite a few years ago. He was 81 years old, so he, you know, wasn't that old. But you know, he his body just said it was time, and so he's passed away. I talked a little about, I want to get back into Dr. King's holiday, but I think it was my brother-in-law, Jeff, up in Linden, Washington, sent me this article about the junior ROTC program in Florida, along with the National Rifle Association, having this horrible, horrible, the Junior ROTC Training Corps, with funding from the National Rifle Association, is providing high school students with marksmanship and gun safety training. The report prompted debate online as to whether students should be exposed to weapon training in the first place. The Junior ROTC student training is with air rifles that look just like a regular rifle. The outline drew a link between Junior ROTC and the mass shootings at Parkland, Florida, because Nicholas, I don't even want to say his last name, was wearing one of the program's shirts. U.S. Air Force Staff Sergeant Dillinger and Staff Sergeant Corey Smith performed flag detail during a ceremony signifying the change from tactical to enduring operations at Camp Simba, Mandalay, Kenya. So we've talked about the U.S. military being in Africa. You know, there's more in Africa, American troops, than they're letting on. You know, with China, you know, that's the big threat to America, and, you know, being the biggest bully on the block, it's China. That was enough of a connection to spark a controversy in Nashua, New Hampshire, where some students argued that the school was supposed to be a gun-free zone and that air rifles used by the junior ROTC program looked genuine. One headline from December 11 portrayed the junior ROTC as ensnaring teenagers. Thousands of teens are being pushed into military junior ROTC. Another headline from the same day blasted junior ROTC textbooks for teaching outdated gender messages with conservative shading of political issues. Junior ROTC textbooks offer an alternative view of the world. That's pretty scary. Junior ROTC has been criticized for promoting military groomers. At a time when many districts are going to great lengths to keep guns out of schools, Junior ROTC has become one of the few programs on campuses that promote weapons training. Anti-junior ROTC rhetoric was apparent on Twitter, with Substack writer Caitlin Johnstone labeling junior ROTC as a military groomer. Another Twitter user responded to the post, agreeing that groomers is the right word. Junior ROTC is receiving criticism online for training students on marksmanship. The militarization of children, especially vulnerable children, is what bothered me, one of the teachers said. Junior ROT instructors, on the other hand, told the New York Times that the marksmanship program helps protect students from accidents, making weapon training available to disadvantaged students who might otherwise have no one to show them how to handle a weapon safely. Another junior ROTC instructor said that the lessons of the program are more than just practical skills: focus, concentration, self-discipline, and self-control. That's what a shooter takes away from marksmanship. That's just, oh man. Yeah. Still going on. I don't know what the junior ROTC programs here in Oregon. John Grushow would know, but you know, if they have, you know, weapons training with air rifles, John would know. I'm really sure he would know. So, but getting back to the subject I'm on, I'm having to look through this, I'm really sorry, to find the stuff I want to talk about. I kind of wish that my printer had worked. Oh, this is one of the things. Computer's really slow. Really slow. Come on. What it's about, my brother-in-law also sent this to me. It's about Julian Assange, who's still in prison in Great Britain. And he sent me this article. You know, Julian Assange, the only reason he's in prison now is because of the USA, you know, saying that he gave out military secrets. And the reason that they're secrets is because they did something wrong. Australian Prime Minister Anthony Albanese on Wednesday urged the US and UK to close the extradition process against WikiLeaks co-founder Julian Assange, saying enough is enough. During an interview with ABC Radio, the Australian premier said that the country's position on Assange is very clear, which he had communicated to US and UK. I agree that enough is enough. It's time this issue be brought to a close. And I've made it very clear to the U.S. administration and to the U.K. government, United Kingdom as well, that my view hasn't changed from the view I had when I was opposition leader, which is that it's time that this was brought to a close. Australia has wanted to bring their citizen back to Australia, saying, you know, that he's been through enough. He's really not in good shape, being in that prison like that. So, you know, they're willing to bring him home and you know, take care of him and everything. I don't think that they'll put him back into prison. But the U.S. has a long memory of holding a grudge from one regime to the next regime in this country. You know, they don't forget. They do not forget. And some of the stuff that Julian put out, you know, just made the U.S. government look really bad, because what they did was bad. You know, killing civilians is bad. I heard a general, these generals are full of it, you know. They're talking about what they should do in Ukraine, which is, you know, that is a horrible, horrible thing going on in Ukraine right now. So many people are dying. So many people are dying. And, you know, as wars got more sophisticated, you know, more and more civilians are dying. Then sometimes more than the soldiers on each side are dying, but you know, that's got to come to an end, and it's a bloody mess. You know, right now the U.S. and some of the so-called Western countries want Germany to send their real high-tech battle tanks to the Ukraine, and Germany's really, you know, they don't think they're going to do it. And they're getting pressure put on them by the U.S. and by U.K. and United Kingdom. But they came out the other day and said, why don't you send your big battle tanks to the Ukraine? Come to find out that that's not in the U.S.'s plans, is to send their high-tech tanks to Ukraine, but they want, you know, Germany to send their tanks. You know, the U.S. is more involved in that bloody battles going on over there than they're letting people know. You know, I guarantee you they're giving them all the intelligence information they want. They're giving them just, you know, this weaponry, and there's a mercenaries on both sides, the Wagner group fighting with the Russians, and then you have these other militia groups, you know, from different countries, including the U.S. has troops there fighting. So, you know, like Gandhi said, an eye for an eye, and pretty soon we're all blind. So, that's just a horrible way to go about it. I'm going to try and find this. Oh, here it is. See if I can get it to come up. Okay, here we go. Martin Luther King Day. Boy, they had a that was a long fight to get that to be a national holiday. Ty, do you remember that? Remember when they had the, it took a long time for them to even get that to be a holiday. Just craziness. Dr. King, Martin Luther King Day, officially birthday of Dr. King, and often referred to as shorthand by MLK Day, is a federal holiday in the United States marking the birthday of Dr. King. It is observed on the third Monday of January each year. Born in 1929, Dr. King's actual birthday is January 15, which in 1929 fell on a Tuesday. The holiday is similar to holidays set under the Uniform Monday Holiday Act. The earliest Monday for this holiday is January 15, and last is January 21st. But it was on the 16th this day. And there was, celebrations all over the place. And
1986 was the first one.
1986, Ty said, was the first one. That's great. It's great. You know, there needs to be more of for our sisters and brothers, you know, besides these holidays for white landowners. And then you have stuff like Valentine's Day and stuff like that. You're just crazy. The civil rights movement. I was listening to a program. I can't remember where I heard it, but it was talking about a veteran who had fought in the Korean War joining into the march that was attacked by the state police. I think it was in Alabama or Mississippi. I'll find out. But he was saying that being a black veteran, he said that he didn't expect to get any special treatment. He says he sure didn't. He got got clubbed pretty bad by the state troopers. But that happens. Veterans, after wars, veterans, we come back disillusioned with everything, especially in wars like Korea, Vietnam, Iraq, and some of these, Grenada, Dominican Republic, Panama, wars that really have nothing to do with us. It used to be just guys coming back from wars. Now it's our sisters coming back from wars and having the same feelings that the guys have coming back from war. Women veterans, boy, they're really having a problem with homelessness, substance abuse, just they're having a really, really hard time of it. But I remember, I was starting to talk about, we're going to play another song in just a couple of minutes, Ty, in a couple of minutes. I was talking about watching the violence on TV and talking to my mom and my dad about it. And, I think I was probably 12, maybe 13 years old when, it was really starting to get really uglier than ugly. And I remember asking my mother, seeing these children getting attacked by German Shepherd police dogs, by getting clubbed by this cops, you know, beginning just attacked by these fire hoses. Just the violence on folks. And I remember asking my mom, I asked her, what's going on? And she said, you know, people have a right to live like everybody else in this country. They have a right to vote like everybody else in this country. And I said, they're Americans. They have all those rights. And my mom, I remember my mom looking at me and says, no, they don't. No, they don't. And I remember that it stuck with me to this day. Do you want to go ahead, Ty, and play that second song for me?
Yes.
Okay, thanks, buddy.
Soldiers of peace are not fighting the war, are not looking for enemies behind every door, are not looking for people to kill or to maim. The soldiers of peace are just changing the game. Men who were fighting for all of our lives are now fighting for children, for homes and for wives, fighting for the memory of all who fell before. But the soldiers of peace just can't kill anymore. When the people were screaming, losing their lives, when bodies were broken and spirits were torn, but the soldiers of peace do not want you more. So come on, you warriors who live for the fight.
Going to talk about now some of the violence that was going on during this time. And I remember sitting in front of the TV And when this came on the news, I was just, I couldn't believe that something like this would happen. And it's the 16th Street Baptist Church bombing was a white supremacist terrorist bombing of the 16th Street Baptist Church in Birmingham, Alabama on Sunday, September 15th, 1963. Four members of the local Ku Klux Klan chapter planted 19 sticks of dynamite attached to a timing device beneath the steps located on the east side of the church. Described by Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. as one of the most vicious and tragic crimes ever perpetrated on against humanity. The explosion at the church killed four young girls and injured between 14 and 22 other people. I remember sitting there and looking at that TV as they showed the faces of those young little girls. The four of the girls were killed in the bombing were 80 Mae Collins, she was 14, Cynthia Wesley, she was 14, Carolyn Robertson, she was 14, and Carol Denise McNair, she was 11. These were four little girls that was in the church on Sunday morning, and they were killed, murdered by members of the Ku Klux Klan that didn't want people of color to have the same rights as everybody else in this country. That bombing took place in 1963. Although the FBI had concluded in 1965 that the 16th Street Baptist Church bombing had been committed by four known Klansmen and segregationists, Thomas Edwin Blanton Jr., Herman Frank Cash, Robert Edward Chambliss, and Bobby Frank Cherry. No prosecutions were conducted until 1977, when Robert Chambliss was tried and convicted of first-degree murder of one of the victims, 11-year-old Carol Denise McNair. It took him that long to get one conviction of killing of one of those beautiful little children. Beautiful little children. You know, that is just part of the violence that was going on at that time that we saw every night on TV and in the newspapers. Like I said before, we saw pictures of folks being beat by clubs, by the state police and local police. The use of German shepherds attacking these people, the people. I saw one picture of a young girl, I believe it was a young girl, who had been sprayed by one of those fire hoses, and she was just tumbling down the street, you know, just rolling down the street with that fire hose water just, you know, pushing her back and back and back. I saw a picture of one of the cops, the state police, I believe, holding a guy by his collar from behind and hitting him in the head with his billy club. I saw the cops chasing people, men, women, and children, older men and women and running down the streets, chasing people with their billy clubs. Just beating them for what? You know? So they wanted the same rights that everybody else in this country was supposed to be having. You know, the bus boycott was one thing that really brought the attention of the American people to segregation in this country. I still believe, and a lot of my friends still believe, that racism is the number one problem in this country. I believe that with all of my heart. All of my heart. You know. Violence escalated in Birmingham in the hours following the bombing, with reports of groups of blacks and white youth throwing bricks and shouting insults at each other. Police urged parents of black and white youth to keep their children indoors as the governor of Alabama, George Wallace, one of the most racist governors at that time in the whole country, ordered an additional 300 state police to assist in quelling unrest. The Birmingham City Council convened an emergency meeting to propose safety measures for the city. Although proposals for a curfew were rejected, within 24 hours of the bombings of the church, a minimum of 5 businesses and properties had been firebombed, and numerous cars, most of which were driven by whites, had been stoned by rioting youth. You know, you can only push people up against the wall for so long before they're gonna. 2 more black youth, Johnny Robinson and Virgil Ware, were shot to death in Birmingham within 7 hours of the Sunday morning bombing. Robinson, age 16, was shot in the back by a policeman as he fled down an alley after ignoring police orders to halt. What did he do? He had a choice of being beat to death or being shot. The police were reportedly responding to black youths throwing rocks at cars driven by white people. Robinson died before reaching the hospital. Ware, age 13, was shot in the cheek and chest by a revolver in a residential suburb 15 miles north of the city. A 16-year-old white youth named Larry Sims fired the gun given to him by another youth named Michael Farley, who was sitting in the handlebars of a bicycle driven by his brother. Sims and Farley had been riding home from an anti-integration rally, which denounced the church bombing. When he spotted Ware and his brother, Sims fired twice, reportedly with his eyes closed. Sims and Farley were later convicted of second-degree manslaughter, although the judge suspended their sentence and imposed a 2-year probation upon each of the white youths. You know, that's not all of the violence that was. There's more and more violence, but you know, I'm trying to find this other one. Oh yeah, here we go. Hold on, I know I can get it. I promise I'll have this all printed out next month. It'll be all printed. It won't be so bad. Okay, come on. sorry, but I'm trying. Remember, I told you my brain said when I woke up not to expect things to go smoothly today. I think after this, I'm going to drive home, and I think I'm going to just go crawl in bed and pull the covers over my head until this thing settles down. Come on. Maybe while I'm waiting for that, I'll do this other one here. Okay, just as I was getting that done, this comes up. Okay, this is this is about Viola Liuzzo. Viola Liuzzo was born April 11, 1925, and she was murdered March 25th, 1965. She was an American civil rights activist. In March 1965, Liuzzo heeded the call of Dr. Martin Luther King and traveled to from Detroit, Michigan to Selma, Alabama, in the wake of the Bloody Monday attempt at marching across the Edmund Pettus Bridge. Liuzzo participated in a successful Selma to Montgomery march and helped with coordinating logistics. At the age of 39, while driving back from a trip shuttling fellow activists to the Montgomery Airport, she was fatally hit by shots fired from a pursuing car containing Ku Klux Klan members Collie Wilkins, William Eaton, Eugene Thomas, and Gary Thomas Rowe, the last of whom was actually an undercover informant working for the FBI. Although the state of Alabama was unable to secure a murder conviction, Wilkinson, Eaton, and Thomas were charged in federal court with conspiracy to intimidate African Americans under the 1871 Ku Klux Klan Act, a Reconstruction civil rights statute. On December 3rd, the trio was found guilty by an all-white, all-male jury and were sentenced to 10 years in prison. And Viola, she was married. She had five children, and she had been married. This was her second marriage, and her husband was a labor organizer, and so she was very, very political. Rowe testified that Wilkins had fired two shots into Liuzzo on the order of Thomas, and was placed in the witness protection program by the FBI in an effort to deflect attention from having employed Rowe as an informant. The FBI produced disinformation for politicians and the press, saying that Liuzzo was a member of the Communist Party, heroin addicted, and had abandoned her children to have sexual relations with African Americans involved in the civil rights movement. Liuzzo's involvement in the civil rights movement was scrutinized, and she was condemned by various racist organizations. In 1983, the Liuzzo family filed a lawsuit against the FBI after learning about the FBI's activities, but the suit was dismissed. In addition to other honors, Viola's name is today inscribed on the Civil Rights Memorial in Montgomery, Alabama. The memorial was created by Maya Lin. Maya Lin is the young woman who did the Vietnam Memorial, War Memorial in Washington, D.C. Viola Liuzzo was a young white woman. She died at the age of 39 at the hands of the Ku Klux Klan. You know, the same filthy organizations that bombed that church and killed those four young, beautiful black children. Yep. Yep. I've talked about being in the anti-Klan movement back in Tennessee, you know, while I was in college and right after college, and So I have this real deep dislike of the Ku Klux Klan and other racist, fascist organizations. And I'm going to have one more. The murders of Cheney, Goodman, and Swimmer, also known as Freedom Summer murders, the Mississippi Civil Rights Workers murders, or the Mississippi Burning murders, refer to events in which three activists were abducted and murdered in the city of Philadelphia, Mississippi in June 1964 during the Civil Rights Movement. The victims were James Cheney from Meridian, Mississippi, Andrew Goodman, and Michael Swimmer from New York City. All three were Congress of Racial Equality. They had been working with the Freedom Summer campaign by attempting to register African Americans in Mississippi to vote. Since 1890 and through the turn of the century, Southern states has systematically disenfranchised most black voters by discrimination in voter registration and voting. Sound familiar? The three men had traveled from Meridian to the community of Longdale to talk with congregation members at a black church that had been burned. A lot of churches were being burned at that time, too. Not only were they blowing up churches, they were burning them down. The church had been a center of community organizing. The trio was arrested following a traffic stop for speeding outside of Philadelphia, Mississippi, escorted to the local jail, and held for a number of hours. As the three left town in their car, they were followed by law enforcement and others. Before leaving Neshobee County, their car was pulled over. The three were abducted, driven to another location, and shot to death at close range. The bodies of the three men were taken to an earthen dam where they were buried. The disappearance of the three men was initially investigated as a missing person case. The civil rights workers' burned out car was found near a swamp 3 days after their disappearance. So yeah, they burned their own car up and then they ran away, right? An extensive search of the area was conducted by the FBI, local and state authorities, and 400 United States Navy sailors. Well, their bodies were not discovered until 7 weeks later, when the team received a tip. During the investigation, it emerged that members of the local White Knights of the Ku Klux Klan, the Neshobee County Sheriff's Office, and the Philadelphia Police Department were involved in the incident. The murders of the activists sparked national outrage and extensive federal investigation, filed as Mississippi Burning, which later became a movie. In 1967, after the state government refused to prosecute, again, the United States federal government charged 18 members with civil rights violations. Seven were convicted and received relatively minor sentences for their actions. Outrage over the activists' disappearances helped gain passage of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. The trio were shot and murdered by Ku Klux Klan because Cheney was African American, and Goodman and Swimmer were both Jewish. 41 years after the murders took place, one perpetrator, Edgar Ray Killen, was charged by the state of Mississippi for his part in the crimes. In 2005, he was convicted of three counts of manslaughter. He was given a 60-year sentence in 2005. On June 20th, 2016, federal and state authorities officially closed the case, ending the possibility of further prosecution. Killen died in prison in January of 2018. I mean, I could go on and on and on and on about what happened at this time. I could go on and on talking about the veterans who joined the anti-Klan movement during these times. There's so many, many stories that were never covered that should have been covered at that time. You know, those deep southern Dixie states are still pretty horrible places to be in if you're not a white person. Still, the racism, boy, runs deep, 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 deep in this country. You know, for years, it was against the law for whites and blacks to marry. Children from these marriages were treated so horribly in schools. When black children wanted to go to high school, segregated high schools, they were treated so horribly by the crowds outside. It took the National Guard to get, I think it was in Arkansas, where they had to have the National Guard or active military escort black children into these predominantly, well, they were all white schools at the time. You know, nothing has really changed since the beginning of the history of this country when it comes to racism. You know, when it comes to violence against non-white people. Look what happened after the September 11th, when anybody that didn't look quite was set upon by people that are going to get revenge. You know, look what happened, you know, when people of Asian descent were being so brutally attacked in places like New York or San Francisco or Los Angeles. Just brutal. You know, there were pictures of elderly women just being stomped by you know, I'm sorry, I just, you know, I don't, well, I'm running out of time and I'm not going to be able to take calls. I want to thank you for listening to Veterans Voice Radio Show. And we'll be back on February 17th at 9 a.m. And there it is. Thanks, Ty.
Reader's Digest in the back of the dirty bookstore. A plastic flag with gum on the back fell out on the floor. Well, I picked it up and I ran outside, slapped it on my window shield. And if I could see old Betsy Ross, I'd tell her how good I feel. But your flag decal won't get you into heaven anymore. They're already overcrowded from your dirty little war. Jesus don't like killing, no matter what the reason's for. And your flag decal won't get you into heaven anymore. Well, I went to the
cashier said to me, if you join the Christmas club, we'll give you 10 of them flags for free. Well, I didn't mess around a bit. I took him up on what he said, and I stuck them stickers all over my car and one on my wife's forehead. But your flag decal won't get you into heaven anymore. They're already overcrowded from your dirty little war. Now Jesus don't like killing, no matter what the reason's for. And your flag decal won't get you into heaven anymore. Said, but your flag decal won't get you into heaven anymore. We're already overcrowded from your dirty little war. Now Jesus don't like killing, no matter what the reason's for. And your flag decal won't get you into heaven anymore.
You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. The time is 10 a.m. Next up is Sea Change.
Concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for